The topic we have chosen today is how to get the most out of life. So let us start with a small exercise, right? I think all of you have your cell phones with you, and your cell phone has a calculator, right? So you can open your calculator. I just want to make you aware of some interesting things, right? So open your calculator, and so let us say we have today the life expectancy, right, in India is around, the average life expectancy is around 70, but I think most of us young people, by the time we grow old and given our background, maybe we might live up to maybe 85, 95, right? So let us assume our life expectancy is, let us say, 85. Right, just let us take a number. So you can take 85, and all of you know your age now. You can subtract your age from 85. Can you do it now? Right. So this is the number of years, right? And multiply it by 365. So you get a number. So roughly, this is the number of days you have. And depending on how old or young you are, the number might be around 25,000, right? Roughly that's what you got, right? Around 25,000 or less than that, or slightly around that. So this is not a big number, right? You know, 25,000 days is all that you have, and tomorrow it is going to be one less, and next day one more less, right? So this number should ring like an alarm bell in you. Okay, so it's just a handful of days is that I have, and how do I make the best out of it? So that's the talk today, right? So you don't have too long here, and how do you make the best out of it? So let us look at it. So what are we seeking, right? So we are all, so how do you know what we are seeking? Each of us seeks various things, and there are a lot of thought experiments which are available in the various psychology courses. People have designed, psychologists have designed. One of the popular ones is, don't think I'm too negative talking about death and things like that, but that's a fact of life, right? So suppose in your memorial, right, like funeral or memorial or whatever, your people who are close to you, let's say your family member or your neighbor, your friend, right? Now, when they tell a few words about you, what do you want to hear? Right? So think about someone, your father, mother, husband, wife, neighbor, classmate, your closest friend, whoever, right? Think of someone and then imagine, okay, fine, like say you have popped off and they are at your funeral and they are been invited to tell a few words about you. Now, what do you want to hear from them, right? Like, what? So, if you think about that, do you want them to hear about you as an intelligent person, friendly person, kind person, is very patient? So, obviously, they won't tell bad things about you, right, at that time. So you are saved from the bad things. So what are the good things you want to hear about you? Because we don't want to worry about the bad things. Like if we focus on the good things, then automatically the bad things will get resolved by themselves. So what are the good things about you that you want to hear from your close people? Now that is kind of your core value around which you can build your entire life. Right? Because that is what you value. Of course, over a period of time, it might change. Right? But at least now, This is what is your core value, right? So now if you focus on that core value and if you make your life's decisions around that core value, there is a high probability that on your deathbed, you will feel satisfied. Yes, I have led a good life. You'll be satisfied about yourself. So that is what we are looking for, right? So now, if you focus this way, then right from now, then there won't be any regrets. And that, in a way, kind of measures whether you have lived a life about which you are satisfied and you are happy about. Okay? I'm just sort of putting a few seeds in your mind so that you can think about them later and you can develop them and you can design your own life based on them. Okay. Let us go for another kind of exercise. Like, let us keep it more interactive now. Suppose you are given 10 lakh rupees, right? Suppose you are given 10 lakhs rupees and you are asked to spend it, let's say in 3-4 days, for example, or doesn't matter. You are asked to spend on something, right? So what will you spend on? Let me hear from you also, right? So suppose if you are given, like, take 15-20 seconds to think about it and then you can answer, right? So if you are given 10 lakh rupees and you are asked to spend it, what would you want to spend it on? Travel. Okay. What other answers you have?
Charity.
Charity. Okay. More answers. Like, come on.
Business.
Okay. You want to do business with that. Okay. So I have asked people to say, like, if given 10 lakhs rupees to spend, what will you spend on? So I heard you will do business with it. I heard you will travel. I heard charity.
Education.
You'll spend, you'll invest in yourself, basically for education. Or education for yourself or for others? For others. Okay, so that's basically education for others. Okay? Any other answers? Come on, just don't be shy. Just let your inhibitions off and just tell what comes to your mind. No, it's just given. 10 lakhs is given and it is up to you to do whatever you want with it. We want a high-end motorbike. Okay? Yep. Okay, fine. So we heard some answers, right? So now if we see what was told, they can be put into three categories. So someone said high-end motorbike, which is a possession, right? Or business, like, which gives you possessions, which gives you money. And then someone said charity. Then someone said travel, which is an experience, right? So there are two ways of defining it. One is, you can say there is one way to spend it is on making more money, like to make it multiply, right? And then the other one is you have you can make it as an experience, luxury, those kind of things. Or you can, third one is charity and for education, like, so basically it all comes under charity, right? So one is called artha, which is wealth, security, right, possessions mainly. Second one is called kama, which is experiences, luxuries, all those things. Third one is dharma, charity, social service, all that, right? So if I give you 10 lakh rupees, you think as wild as possible, try to come up with ways of spending it, you can always put them into one of these three, right? And the fourth one is there where you say like, well, I don't want it. Just because you give, why should I take, right? So that comes to renunciation, right? So there's a fourth one, which is the moksha kind of, right? So this is called the four purusharthas, right? So now the question is, now there are four purusharthas, there are four ways to spend money, and of course this includes time also, right? Because I gave an example of money, and similar thought experiments are there which we can make with time, right? We don't want to spend too much time on that now. Like for example, you can try it out later when you are alone. Like say, you can say, okay, if I'm given 15 minutes to live, what I'm going to do with that 15 minutes? Or if I'm given 3 months to live, how am I going to spend that 3 months? So these kind of thought experiments, if you do it, then you'll be able to come up with answers, how you want to do, what you want to do, where you want to put your time into. And irrespective of whatever you come up with, finally you'll be able to categorize them into one of these. Okay. So now the question is, which is the better place to put your time and money into? Is it into possessions, or is it into experiences, or is it into social service? What is it? Right? So that is the question now. Now, I was looking at this, I was trying to look at some research, psychological research which has been happening on this, and just because I cannot remember the names and authors and papers, like I just got a list of them. Okay, so I'll give you some highlights. Okay, so in 2005, University of California professor Sonia Lyubomirsky, like she came up with a publication, and what they found was happiness gives success, and not success does not give happiness. Remember carefully, like what they found was happiness gives success. Success does not give happiness. So they did a lot of experiments and they came to this conclusion. Like say they got people and then they induced people to be happy by giving some lucky, like, you know, they manipulate as if like, okay, they are successful on something and then they are happy with something, and then like food and like the various kinds of experiments they did to make different parameters by which people can be happy. And then they had some control groups also, and then they gave some problems, and then some different kinds of quizzes, mathematical problems, and then puzzles to solve. So they did so many combinations, and finally what they found was a happy person has a more probability of solving some problem in a intelligent way. They're able to apply both logical thinking and creativity. They are able to do better than a person who is not happy. So happiness results in being successful in solving logical problems or creativity problems. So that is an observation which they came up with. And they also tried the other way around, like, does success give happiness, right? So that's another question. So they did research on that also. Like actually even in the 1970s, there is a person, Philip Brickman of Northwestern University. So they did experiments, and what they found was happiness or sorrow, whatever is there, it is very, very short-lived. So what they did was they found people who have won lotteries. Right, people have won lotteries, and they have different kinds of questionnaires to measure the amount of happiness they have. So how they do it is, like, say for example, if given a cartoon book, a book of jokes, right? Now how much a person is able to so basically these are standard ones, like, so they give the same kind of set to different kind of people and then ask them, okay, how good is this joke, how much they enjoyed this joke, or music, how much they enjoyed a particular music, and then they sort of mix various genres and all that. So they have pretty heavy academic constraints. So they, what they asked was, they checked with people who have won lotteries. At that time, they measured the amount of happiness. And after 1 month, they again measured. And after 1 year, they measured. So what they found was, a person who won a lottery, the first month, they have their happiness goes up. But then within 3 months, they are back to normal. There is absolutely no difference between the happiness level of a person who has won a lottery and a person who has not won a lottery after 3 months. So this was what they found. And then they also looked at people who had an accident and whose leg had to be amputated, or those kind of people who met with accidents. There also, when they tried to measure the happiness, what they found was, at the first 1 month, they are very sad. But within 3 months, they get used to it and they are back to their normal level of happiness. So what they were able to, and this they repeated several cultures, several places, and they were able to show that either happiness or sorrow, we get adjusted to it. And after some time, like, we are back to normal. And there is a person, Ed Diner, in University of Illinois in 1985. He did a research on the top most rich people according to the Forbes 100s list in US. And they looked at what is the level of happiness of them compared to normal American citizens. And what they found was, the top 100 richest people in America are only marginally happier than the rest of the Americans. So various. So this is just a kind of sample, right? And then, like this, they have done a lot of research. What they have found is, possessions don't result in happiness. And of course, if a person is deprived of the basic necessities, then it makes a difference, right? Like, so if a person is poor, then for a person to become kind of middle class, kind of, it makes a difference. There's an amount of happiness goes up. But once the basic necessities are taken care of, no amount of additional possessions, additional money, gadgets, nothing makes difference to the amount of happiness which a person has. So this has been proved academically by meticulous psychological research. Okay, so this is the first point. The second point is, so now, what gives happiness, right? And if you see what actually gives happiness from a biological point of view, there are just four chemicals in the brain, right? I think most of you must be aware of it, like dopamine, oxytocin, right? And serotonin and endorphin. Easy way to remember is DOSE. You can call it as dose or dose. Okay, so remember, dose makes you happy. Okay, four chemicals, right? Now, these four chemicals are the ones which make people happy, right? And genetically, by evolution, these four chemicals have their own roles to play, why they make us happy, right? So if you take dopamine is basically pushes people to attain goals, right? So for example, like, if when a sprinter is running, when they see the finish line, they get an additional energy boost in their system to be able to push forward and achieve it. Now, that is the work of dopamine, right? It basically creates more energy in the system, creates happiness, motivates people to attain goals. So dopamine is the one which is pushing towards goals. Oxytocin is a social chemical, like, so that is the one which, when you have people, human contact, it gets generated. So basically, evolutionarily, like, if you see, like, it helps it helped human beings to be as a herd, be together, and be a social animal. So to push towards being a social animal, this oxytocin was there. Like, it has been evolved as a part of the natural system. Third, you have serotonin. Serotonin is the what is called the leadership neurotransmitter, right? So it, whenever a person takes a leadership position, then serotonin goes high. Like, say if I'm standing here and talking to you, like, so this induces serotonin, right? Or anytime where you sort of help people or you are able to make a difference in someone's life, like, serotonin basically pushes you, like, where you are, it makes you to lead, right? And then endorphins basically, they help you to, they are basically painkillers, right? Endorphins, when you're exerting yourself and where you need to push yourself forward, like, let's say for example, like, let us say you're working on your thesis and then submission date is there and you want to work towards it. Now, what happens? Like, you are able to forget your sleep, you're able to forget your lunch, without food, without sleep, you're able to push yourself farther. Now, that is because of endorphins, right? It helps you to go beyond your biological necessities, go beyond your pains, and it helps you to push towards the goal. Now, these four chemicals are the ones which give you happiness. So, anytime, anyone, whatever be the reason, if a person experiences happiness, these four chemicals are there in the body. They are the ones which push you. Now, evolutionarily, initially, like, as animals, now these four chemicals had a particular role, right? So, let us say, as a early human being is chasing a deer. Now, he needs to be motivated to chase. So, there, like, you know, like, the goal is there, like, so it has to push. Dopamine keeps pushing him, and then he feels pain in his legs because he's being exerting physically. But then he should not be distracted by the pain in his body. Like, so endorphins kick in and they act as a painkiller, right? So that way, like, for everything is, these chemicals have been designed so that we can proceed towards our goal, and it motivates towards the goal, and it gives happiness when we attain the goal, right? Then evolution, it did beautiful tricks. Now, these chemicals and this whole concept of physical survival mechanism, now evolution thought, like, okay, like, this is a good way to ensure that the species survives, but then it wants to go one more level, right? So where it has introduced this concept of emotions, right? So the nature has put in emotions into the human psyche, so that instead of half of it is taken care of by that, like, so every mother, like, including even an mother of an animal, takes care of its children. So now this is a trick of evolution, right? It has put in this concept of motherhood, right? You can say nature, you can say God, like, we don't, so this concept of motherhood is put into the parents so that the children are taken care of, and that way the species is propagated, right? The species multiplies. So this way, every emotion which is there, both positive emotions like love and also negative emotions like anger and jealousy and all competition, so all these things are there so that as a species the animal survives and the species survives in the environment and also among the competition. So this way, but even in this case, right, when these emotions come into play, finally how nature works at the chemical level is again the same four compounds, right? The same dopamine and endorphins, and these are the ones which get secreted and which induces the person to proceed towards. So what I'm coming to is, not only a physical trigger causes these neurotransmitters to get secreted, even the emotional counterparts, whenever there's an emotion needed, that also finally works only by these chemicals. Okay, now this is the next step. So evolution has given this so that the species is able to survive, and that's at the animal level, right? And then evolution goes still further, right? So when I say evolution goes still further, you can also look at it from the neuroscience point of view. Like, if you see our brains, our brain has got three parts. One is called the reptilian brain, right, which is basically called the animal brain, which takes care of all the involuntary actions. And then all your reflex actions come from there. Then you have the limbic system, which is the emotional brain, right? Which is what I talked about now. Like, that is the one responsible for all the emotions in the brain. And then that came next in the, if you see the evolutionary history, like that came next. And then came the neocortex. It's called neocortex because it's a new part of the brain, right? Like, it came very late in the evolution. And the neocortex, that gives you a judgment of right and wrong. So they are called, what is called the mirror neurons in the prefrontal cortex. The mirror neurons help us to be able to simulate experiences, and that is this, and the neocortex is very well developed in human beings, and that is why we are able to learn, speak, languages, everything comes from the neocortex. Like, suppose if you are able to plan, you are able to say, okay, fine, now it is here, like I want to attain this, or like how should I do it? You are able to simulate the whole situation, your goals, everything in your brain, and then you are able to decide, okay, if I do this, then this will happen. So that is because of the mirror neurons, which is in the neocortex. Okay, so now evolution has given this part, this neocortex, by which we are able to do all these things, and that changes the behavior from the animal behavior to the human behavior. So the animal behavior was all about competition, like, you know, the survival of the strongest, and you can say strong beats the weak, and all those kind of animal behavior comes from the limbic system. When it comes to neocortex, the whole, that is where the human characteristics come. So competition is replaced by cooperation, and the strong doesn't run over the weak, the strong protects the weak, right? And you help each other. The animal, if you take in animal societies, animals of the same species compete with each other. It's only in human societies that the strong protects the weak, even when there is no biological connection. If there's a biological connection, then nature works through the limbic system, where the right chemicals are secreted, and then the mother feels happy to feed the child. But in a human society, a mother adopts a stranger, right? People adopt and they give in charity. Now, these charity and these kind of systems come from the neocortex. And of course, again, finally, at the chemical level, it's the same. So the neocortex does all these things and then says, okay, if you do this, then I will give you oxytocin. If you do this, I'll give you dopamine. So finally, the reward system is based on the same four chemicals. But the neocortex, it takes care of that, and it says, okay, if it controls the behavior and then feeds these happiness chemicals into the brain so that a person is induced to do that. Okay, so this is how the human evolution has come from a neurobiological point of view. Now, psychologists, they have done experiments. So first experiment I told you, like, from possessions don't make you that happy, right? Then they made more experiments, right? I'll tell you, and okay, I'll skip these parts of experiments. Okay, yeah, so let us look at this. So in 2003, Leif van Baveri and Thomas McCullough, like, they have done an experiment where they have tried to identify which gives more lasting happiness. Is it possessions or is it experiences? Like, say, suppose, for example, like, I asked you the question, like, if you're given 10 lakhs, what will you do? Now, one person said, I'll buy a bike. The other person said, I'll go out for a travel. Now, does bike give you more happiness or in the long term, or does travel give you more happiness in the long term for the same amount of money for the same person, right? So these kind of experiments they have done, and again, like, huge amount of data and everything is available. And what they found was experiences give more happiness compared to possessions. And also, possessions, you might get something, but very soon you get used to it, and after that it no longer gives you happiness. Whereas if there's an experience, you keep talking about it, you keep thinking about it, and it gives a long return, like, it, the happiness you keep deriving out of it, it is in the long term. So this way, what they have shown is that a happiness which comes out of your limbic system, right, at an emotional system, is much more, both in terms of quantity and in terms of the long term effect, it is much more than a happiness which comes out of your possessions. Clear? Then they have gone one more level, and there is a experiment. There was a study done in 2008 by three professors like Dunn, Alamy, and Norton from University of British Columbia in Canada, and it was published in Science in 2008. So where they tried to see if the money which you spend, which gives more happiness, if you spend it on yourself or you spend it for others. Okay, so they did experiments by giving certain amount of money, just like I told you, right? And in fact, they did both real and simulated, right? What I told was a simulation. I didn't give you 10 lakhs. So they did both on a simulation, and they really gave money to people and then said, okay, fine, I give you this money, go and spend it. And they had one group of people who they got them to spend on themselves, buy whatever you want. And for another set of people, they said, okay, you buy whatever you want for your loved ones or even for strangers. And they had these kind of experiments done. And there was another group who went even one more step further, like which is really very interesting. In 2007, there was the University of Oregon, right, that also was published in Science, William Harbaugh. What they did was, they put people in the scan, the MRI scan, and then through audio reflex, they induced into them, they told them instructions. Okay, suppose I give you this much money, then okay, now you spend on this. They were instructing people, and that they were trying to study which parts of the brain get activated on various things, right? Like, so basically they did experiments, and both by simulation and by real experiments, and both by observing behavior and also by the brain activity, what they have clearly established is you become happier by spending money on others than spending money on yourself. Suppose if some money is given to you, like if you spend that money on someone else, your brain gives more happy chemicals in the long term and also in the short term compared to you spending on yourself, because this is how your neocortex works. Like, so which basically shows that the happiness which is induced by your neocortex over is more, both in terms of quantity and in terms of the long-term effect, than the happiness which is induced by your limbic system. And that is more long-term compared to the happiness is induced from your reptilian brain. Okay. So now putting back to what we started with, so which shows that we talked about the goals of human life, right? We have artha, kama, and dharma we talked about, right? So spending your time and effort and depending on happiness which comes out of artha, if it is at one level, research has proved that what comes out of experiences and emotions is much more. More happiness you get out of emotions than out of possessions. And more than both, you get more happiness out of charity. Charity, social service, when you start helping others, that gives you more returns in terms of happiness than either emotions, experiences, or in terms of possessions, right? So this has been proved very clearly by so much of psychological experiments. Okay, now Western psychology stops there, right? Now Indian psychology, Indian philosophy goes one more step, where we have one more purusharta, which is called the moksha, right? And everywhere in Indian philosophy, we see that, okay, after dharma comes moksha, right? So if you see Vishnu Sahasranama, like you say, like, shrutva dharma naseshena pavanani cha dharma shah yudhishthiram shantanuvam punareva prichati, right? Like, so after having learnt everything about dharma and being satisfied completely, now to go to the next step, Yudhishthira again asks Bhishma, okay, now what next, right? Similarly, the Gita also, the same thing. Gita also talks about the same thing, right? It says, Aruruksho Munir Yogam Karma Karanam Uchyate So initially, okay, karma is the karana and all activities and everything. Then yoga rodasya tasya eva shamah karana muchyate. So after that finishing everything, now you go to the next level. So the entire Western psychology, Western science talks about these three levels of pursuits, three levels of happiness which comes out of this. And Indian philosophy goes one more step and it goes to what is the happiness which comes out of the next purushartha, it's called the antima purushartha, the last purushartha, which is moksha, which basically is about renunciation, and it is about knowledge, getting a right sense about yourself, who am I, like getting the right image, identity about yourself. So those come under the spiritual realm, comes under the antima purushartha. And going by the sequence, right, by the krama, like by the induction, right, if this gives, we already science has proved, okay, this provides this much happiness, better than this is this, better than this is this. Now being the next step, it should provide more happiness if research is done on that. Unfortunately, not much research is done on that level. Hopefully in future that research would be done. And of course, the Indian scriptures already talk about the levels of happiness. The Taittiriya Upanishad talks about the levels of happiness, and it already says that is going to give you more happiness than the other three levels. So, lack of time and lack of scientific data, I stop here. Okay? So, to put it in summary, right? So, how to make the best out of your life? As per scientific research on psychology and neuroscience, right? Better than possessions is experience and emotional level, getting happiness out of that. And better than that is charity, social service, where you work for others. That gives more happiness than the other two levels. And there are a lot of references. You can go and search for all these papers. And so if you... I think like there's enough Google Mama is there, like you can just search and you can figure out all this, the source papers, you can get out of them. Okay, thank you.